previously.tvpodcastnetwork.
My name is Josephine. I'm 24. I'm from Santa Cruz, California, and I'm a nursing student. I really love taking care of people, but I'm a little bit lonely. I have my cat, but, you know, it's not the same.
Meow. 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 Meow.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 140 for the week of January 9th, 2017. I am Platinum Vagine David T. Cole, and I'm here with Bad Nick Dick Joke Sarah D. Bunting.
Nick Smack. Wait.
Red Dress Designer Tar Ariano.
I'm a trillionaire!
And Dolphin in a Shark, Jeff Drake.
I'm definitely the hottest bride.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Extra Hot Great, episode 140 with one Mr. Jeff Drake. Hello, Jeff Drake.
Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Indeed. Before we get into our lead topic, which is The Bachelor, I just want to let everybody know that the podcast is now going to be released on Wednesdays instead of Tuesdays. And then all the minis will shift accordingly. So that's the big news of the week. So
yeah.
set your expectations to Wednesdays. Tara.
Welcome back to Jeff, as previously discussed. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, Jeff.
And we have Jeff here because he is pinch covering The Bachelor this season while Stephanie Green is out on mat leave. We've had two episodes now. It's part of the reason why we moved to Tuesdays this week. And then we liked it so much, we decided, let's keep it here and see how it goes. So let's talk a little bit. Jeff, give us an overview of what happened in the premiere with the, as they're known, limo arrivals. Who were the standouts? Who were the craziest? Who were the ones that made you think, based on their intros, they could go all the way?
Well, I have to say that this was, of all the, like, traditionally, the first episode is my favorite episode to watch because it's, like, super crazy. Somebody sings, somebody reads a poem. You know, like one out of three of these premiere episodes, like some lady is like, look how bendy I am. none of that happened. And it was very disappointing that people got a little bit drunk, but like nobody was like really like, it was kind of boring, except for the lady who showed up in a shark costume.
Mm-hmm.
and kept it on all night and kept insisting it was a dolphin costume because she loves dolphins.
Yeah.
And she was so weirdly sincere about it.
Yeah.
that it was kind of charming. It was like, oh, she seems sweet, even though like what the fuck is she doing on The Bachelor wearing a shark costume?
Do you know that actress that's in all the Judge Apatow movies in some small role?
Carla Gallo.
She's Carla Gallo.
Mm.
Yeah.
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 Oh, yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah, that's a good call.
You should also mention the reason that she was in a shark costume she was trying to pass off as a dolphin costume was not just because she loves dolphins. She's, her job, as it's represented on the show, is aspiring dolphin trainer. So she's not even a dolphin
right.
trainer. It's just what she wants to do.
No, it's on her dream board.
Yeah.
You know, along with like, you know, go to Dave and Buster's every week, you know, or whatever. Like,
I like to give people credit on this. You know, give people the benefit of the doubt, rather. But I'm not quite sure if this person, you know, was doing a bit with the shark costume or
right.
whether she put on a costume that had a whole bunch of teeth that fell right in front of her eyes and she still insisted it was a dolphin. Either way, yeah. I kind of enjoyed it.
The thing about this show is that people who go on it are not smart. Jeff, you watch the show. Would you agree that is the case?
I would definitely agree with that. These are not smart people. A lot of the people are definitely troubled. you know, and I mean, like, and have troubles of varying degrees. Like, some are just like emotionally wounded from being terrible at relationships, mm-hmm. you know, and some are like pathologically crazy. You know, and so, you know, we have all of those. Like, the people who cast the show do a really good job of finding certain types that are always represented. The super crazy one, the, you know, the like emotionally fragile ones who like seem strong at first, but then they're like, I didn't realize he'd be kissing so many women. It's like, but at what point didn't you realize that? Like, did you think you were going on a different show?
Particularly this season, when we should say Nick has a long association with Bachelor Nation. Speak on that, Jeff.
Yeah. Well, Nick originally showed up on Andy's season of The Bachelorette, and he came in second place to a guy whose name escapes me now, but who is a former baseball player. And look, let's just call him Josh. I was going to call him Jose Canseco because he's basically Jose Canseco. Although maybe a tiny bit handsomer and maybe just a little bit smarter.
Let's pause that right there and let our baseball fan weigh in. Sarah, what do you think?
Sarah, is it close?
Yeah, I would say Jose Canseco is marginally more clever in a lizard brain kind of way, I'm not going to get into a like big argument about it. However you feel,
I'll accept that. So Nick comes in second. Like, he thinks he really hit it off with Andy, but then she goes for the handsome meathead instead of, I guess Nick is sensitive. I don't, like, seriously, the women on the show talk about Nick, and I'm like, honestly, where is this person that you're talking about? Because I do see him represented on this show. Like, he's so sexy and he's so manly. It's like, manly.
Sarah, go ahead and build on that. What were you going to say?
Please.
I mean, he's not repellent. I mean, he is. But, like, if you didn't know who he was or anything about this franchise or the fact that he's probably crawling with scabies.
Yeah.
From
they all are
neck to ankles. They all are.
That should be the name of the show. Scabies.
Floor length scabies. He's fine. And there was a lot of chatter in the thread today on our forums at previously.tv about his speech. I don't know if it's an impediment or an affectation. It sounds to me like he got a big old set of Shannon Doherty veneers and decided to try out an FDR impression.
While also having a series of tiny strokes.
Yes. And a couple of big ones thrown in there. Like, every time Corinne appears, you can actually see one eyeball rolling independently, like completely 360 to the left. Anyway, we'll get back to her. But
yes,
like, whole scenes devoted to them being like, he's so hot, he's so sexy. And I'm like, he's completely anonymous. Like, he's interchangeable with 100 other dudes you could see like in the meatpacking district on a Friday night. I just don't get it. And on top of that, if they are new veneers, they're not good. Like, don't get veneers that look like your actual teeth. What's the point of that? Get the full Affleck. Get on with your day.
Right. He's not like a chud who just recently crawled to the surface. But like, the way that they talk about him is like, honestly, like, it's so bizarre. It's like, I mean, like, okay, fine, like, whatever. But like, back to his speech impediment, like, early on in the first episode, he was literally like trying out trying on calling himself the Bachelor for the producers. And he literally was saying, I'm the Bachelor.
Yeah.
I'm the Bachelor. It sounds so weird. I'm the Bachelor. It's like, it sounds weird because that's not how it's pronounced. You're saying a different word. Like, you're not. It sounds weird because there's no ch sound in it. Like, fix that.
And the
like,
weird
what
thing
is wrong
you don't
with
even,
you?
you don't even notice for a while because the way that the English language is being violated in every moment of screen time.
Something like that
you don't even notice. Like between Nick and I, every 5 minutes,
every
whether it's relevant or not, and just the dumb shit they say, like, that's one of the most romantic things is like getting naked. Like, I'm all for romance and getting naked, but what?
Like, or talking to him was intellectual stimulating. It's intellectual, comma, stimulating. I don't know.
It's neither.
I don't know what she means. And she's the therapist.
The worst at adverb, Corinne.
She probably used to own a newspaper and she was the headline writer or something.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, we've kind of oozed into the second episode, as it were. So let's talk about the one that just aired as we record this last night. And the first date is a group date. And I said to Dave, because he doesn't obviously watch it every season, neither do I. But there's almost always some kind of like bridal groom costume. I was about to say challenge. They're all challenges.
Conceit.
Yes.
It's all challenging. It's all challenging.
And so that's what they did this time for the big group date is they had everyone go, and some of them were going to be brides and some of them were going to be bridesmaids and some of them were going to be wacky brides who were like barely dressed. And
right.
Talk about Corinne. How did Corinne cover herself, or rather uncover herself, with glory in that date?
Well, Corinne sort of... Like they had to, like, this is how sort of weak the first episode was, that you really didn't get a full taste of Corinne until like the teaser for what's coming up in the season at the end of the first episode.
Wait, hang on.
Where you see
So tonight I'm going to go see Nick and I'm going to have sex with him. It's just going to be magical. My heart is gold, but my vagine is platinum.
It's going to be magical. she, first of all, she is, I forget what, 23, 26, I can't remember. She has a nanny still.
Yes.
She lives with her family and has a nanny.
For herself, you should specify.
For
like,
herself.
Not like she has a
for
kid.
For herself.
Yes.
No, she has no kid.
She is
a weird sexualized baby who has a nanny. Anyway, so there's that. There's that about Corinne. She frequently, I feel like it's when she gets drunk enough, she starts talking about herself in the third person, which is like, it's exactly what you want from the show. You want that crazy person who's like, well, Corinne wants what Corinne gets, or, you know, and for her to say it that way, to say it backwards, like, you know, like, because that is the essence of The Bachelor, is like of The Bachelor. So Corinne, like, first of all, like when I was watching it and God, I mean, to do this job, look, this is the sacrifice I do for you people. I end up watching this show twice. Mm-hmm. So, and the second time I watched it last night, like when she puts on, she's like a bikini bride. It's a beach wedding bride, but she's in a bikini essentially. And as soon as she gets it on, she like preens about in front of all the other women, like, and just constantly is like posing for, not even for the camera. She's not like posing for the camera, but for like whoever is standing around, I guess. And just constantly talking about how, like, she's so sexy and, like, this is great. And they're all so covered up. And then in walks Brittany, who's the Adam and Eve bride, who's basically just wearing a leafy bikini bottom and then hair extensions to cover her boobs. And then she falls apart. She's like horrified and, like, just sits down because everybody else is like, you look so cute. Look at your booty. Oh, my God. And Corinne just sits down in a corner and darkly drinks a glass of wine, which is also exactly what you want from a person like Corinne in this show. You want her to have those dark moments of, like, what the fuck am I going to do to succeed here? So then they get in the pool and she's like, well, I've got to step up my game. So she just takes off her top and presses her boobs against Nick and then turns around and she's like, Janet Jackson, my boobs. And he's like, okay. And so he Janet Jacksons her boobs. And and she Wait, I want to back up because she does say. I want to back up because I touched on this in, when I wrote about it, but I it has to be said that she literally says that she was never a bridesmaid, but she was a natural born bride. And I just want to stop for a moment to just think about the phrase natural born bride. Mm-hmm. I do not like what the fuck does that mean? Like what is she even implying?
Well, I'm gonna give my impression and then ask Sarah as a fellow woman to back me up.
Before you do that, okay. I just wanted to say, rewinding a little bit, that yes. a wine glass darkly is my favorite Philip K. Dick character.
The movie was terrible, but the book is amazing.
I was saying this to Dave last night, that by definition, everyone who goes on The Bachelor is like at the crazy end of the basic spectrum. I think this we can all agree. But there is a certain kind of woman, and I don't say this as to be sexist. It's just true, in my opinion. Sarah can dispute it if she thinks it's wrong. Who just regards their wedding day and dreams about it her whole life as like the day she gets to be the star of her own life and can't imagine ever achieving anything that will be equivalent in, like, for example, her career, just to name one, or, you know, how to be a really amazing, awesome friend who saves the day for someone at some point. But just like the idea of there's a movie of my life and the climax is my wedding day. And after that, nothing else matters. Sarah, would you agree that if you go on The Bachelor, you're that lady?
Yeah, certainly going on The Bachelor is not. That's not the exclusive province of prospective brides on The Bachelor. And there's also this, you know, there is a type of woman that does view herself, and this is often a function of relative youth or immaturity, mm-hmm. as constantly in competition with every other woman. So,
yes,
like The Bachelor is her sort of like the apotheosis of her sense of self as being the best, like, cutest woman, and yes. her idea of what makes the best woman has everything to do with her fuckability and nothing to do with using adverbs correctly. And there is something about Corinne, like, I was going to ask about this later, but since we're already here, I'm finding that, like, this, The Bachelor itself is much more enjoyable after watching Unreal for a couple seasons and just knowing how much of it is string pulled. And, my sense is that, not that Corinne is being manipulated all that much. Like, I think most of the crazy is right there. And then they just filled her with Chardonnay and shoved her in the direction of Nick multiple times to violate these sacred can I steal you protocols of the elders of Harrison. But it's made it much more fulfilling for me to watch this knowing that they have an arc in mind for her and that she is absolutely playing the part to the hilt. Like, whatever they told her to do or be, she's doing it 100%.
Yeah.
And I kind of love it because she, like, good, don't be there and make friends. Like, that's fine. I wish you wouldn't say it in those words, but.
Yeah.
But she didn't really say it. Like, she just sort of expressed it in a long speech.
That she laid was already drunk by that point.
She was like expressing like, here's how this works. Like, she like, and it was so long, and all of the women were like, I mean, it was so many bitch please looks. It was amazing. It was
but
she just
was
like,
so right about everything she said.
She was like, exactly right.
This is
she
the Bachelor. Okay, she didn't say that. Like, other people are gonna kiss him. If you can't hang, don't like go on Match.com. Like. Everybody else in your
right
suburb.
I mean, she is the necessary piece to the Bachelor puzzle. Like, every season you have to have somebody that's just like, I don't care, I'm gonna sleep with him right now, like, or whatever, because it's the Bachelor. He's gonna like, what, she's gonna go into his room and he's gonna be like, you need to leave. This is inappropriate.
Yeah.
Like, that's not gonna happen. Like, they're gonna have sex and it's gonna have repercussions and the producers will, like, you know. I still think about which was the one? Was it Joe Millionaire? It was
one of the other slurping noises.
Slurping noises. Yes. Exactly. Yes. Thank you, Sarah, yes. for knowing exactly where I was going. Uh-huh. And I think the producers are literally like, I can't wait until we can put slurping noises on the screen. Mm-hmm. You know, so like, it's perfect to have her, and then against her is like Taylor, who's the one who said intellectual stimulating, mm-hmm. who is the recent graduate from Johns Hopkins, mm-hmm. who's basically a therapist now, and it's like, she's,
God help us all.
Yeah, I mean, but she's like, like, she's smart to a point, but not smart enough to just let this shit go. You know, it's like, she's definitely smarter than Corinne, but she is really bugged by the fact that, like, Corinne's plan works.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, duh, of course it does.
Oh, of course it works. Corinne, like, if he turns her away at his hotel room, like, she will just fuck him in front of everybody. Like, she does not care. This is, as Sarah said, this is like a gladiatorial ring. And yes. She is going to triumph and cut off everyone else's heads. Now,
right, which is, go ahead.
I was just going to change the subject to the other crazy person, Liz. Tell them.
That's exactly where I was going.
Please.
Like, Liz. Oh my God. Well, first of all, I'm sad that this will now I will no longer have the opportunity to type Jade and Tanner's wedding.
Absolutely will. I don't see why you should stop. She won't, okay. Even if there's no cameras on her. So,
well, she is gone, unfortunately. Liz has been, you know, Liz is gone, and so we no longer get to hear, like, it was obviously Sarah says, you know, like she's being prodded to do certain things. So, like, obviously it's no surprise, like, the producers sought her out. They recruited her to come on. Nick probably knew about it, you know, and so here she is. But, like, her story makes no sense. Like, they hooked up at Jade and Tanner's wedding, said as if, like, we should, like, it was like Charles and Diana's wedding or something. like we should fucking know who Jade and Tanner are. Like, they got engaged on Bachelor in Paradise, which is like, it's like hitting for the cycle in the minor leagues. High five, Sarah. High five. Sports. Great accomplishment, but who gives a shit? You know, ultimately, nobody's keeping records. Nobody cares. And, like, literally, I had to look up Jade and Tanner, and I was like, I kind of remember Tanner, and, like, Jade, I'm like, I'm sorry, random brunette. Okay, fair enough. So they hook up, they meet there, get drunk, hook up. He asks for her phone number. She decides not to give it to him. And he's like, oh, okay. All right. Well, cool. See you later.
Thanks for fucking me. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Thanks for all the drunken sex that we had. 9 months later, I love that it's 9 months later, because every time they say that, I'm like, where is the baby? Why is there not a baby? Like, that's the best. That would be the even better story. Like, you know, I guess contraception or butt stuff. Anyway.
What's the difference?
That's a form of contraception, guys. So, like, every time she talks about it, she's, like, obviously she's been prompted to say this, but she literally says, Nick and I met before. We met at Jade and Tanner's wedding, and we hit it off. We had great chemistry, and we had sex. Like, although at first she's like, well, you know, maybe we did. I don't know. It's like, right. Yeah, that's why you're on the show, is, like, you met him and kissed him lightly, and then you parted ways. But, like, she... So, like, he asked for her phone number, and she says, no, I'm not going to give it to you. So he's like, okay. They have mutual friends who could get them back together in a heartbeat. She doesn't do that. Then she shows up on The Bachelor. So, like, I hate to be on Nick's side on any issue.
I know.
But on this one, I'm like, he's like, well, what the fuck are you doing on this show then?
Yeah.
Like, obviously, you're just here to be on TV. Like, it's so obvious. And she tries to, like, explain it in a way where – it seems like it's not that, but it makes zero sense. Like, well, I just...
Yeah, she's acting like she left her glass slipper behind, and she was waiting for him to come and fucking find her. Like, they go to this relationship of... Museum of Broken Relationships, and there's going to be this, like, performance of people having fake breakups, and then all of the girls on this group date have to fake break up with Nick, except Liz, who has a whole notebook filled with cringy...
Oh, my God.
Her whole goddamn speech of why she's breaking up with Nick, and she's like, makes it out like the reason that she's there is that she wanted him to fight for her and then he didn't. And so it's like, well, he didn't. So why are you here? Like, have some self-respect, right, Liz. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I mean, it would that's one sort of like it, each time she talks about it, it's slightly different, though. Yeah. It's like, well, I wanted to get to know you. It's like, you know, like, you know, like she talks about like giving her, like after they had sex, like giving the phone number would be like, ugh, you know, that seems so personal. Like, I mean, you just, you know, you were just like inside me, but now a phone number, please. You know,
well,
it's like the
like,
old
oh,
joke.
Well, he was just being polite, like, but then you shut that down. So,
right.
And right. So,
which is weirder, her doing this to get on TV or her actually feeling like, well, let's just stuff this preparation H back in the tube and try to pretend that we don't know each other. Right. Like, y'all right. already fucked.
Right. The best part, though, is because they have this in, like, I know exactly where they are in Hollywood, where they're having the cocktail party. And it's at Hollywood and Highland, which is a giant, like, mall, essentially, right?
Yeah.
Right on the center of Hollywood, on the Walk of Fame and everything. And they're, like, up, like, three floors. And it's obviously, like, 2 a.m. from, like, the traffic that you can see on Hollywood Boulevard. And so there's nobody and nothing in this. And she has to, like, walk out of their nightclub and then down several flights of stairs and then a long walk out to the sidewalk, to the street, all by herself.
Still
it's
with
amazing.
Her drink. She brought her drink with her, too. Like, she had no right. idea when he was like, well, I'm going to have to ask you to leave. And she's like, okay. Oh, shit. Like, for real. It's like, she's still got their glassware in her hand.
I mean, it's just, like, it's the longest, like walk of shit. It's although it's not quite as good as the last Bachelor where they left that one bachelorette
on the
island.
Beach. Yes.
Yeah.
She's still there.
Where it was where she's still there.
Yeah.
Every time they leave somebody somewhere, I'm like, and they're still there. I hope like when Nick walked out of the first cocktail party, it's like, and the ladies are there on the roof, like freezing to death.
Yes. All right, well, let's wrap it up. Do you have an early pick for who you think is going to win this season? Let's start with Sarah.
Well,
oh, sorry.
I'm going to...
Go ahead. Let's start with Jeff, then. Jeff.
Oh, no. Go, Sarah. I'm interested in hearing Sarah's.
Sarah.
Go, Sarah.
I don't think she's going to get far because the ones that I actually like don't usually get far, or they get to, like, number 4, and then they're the next Bachelorette, and then I start to hate them.
Yeah.
With all of that said, I like Raven. She seems cute and sincere, and I like that she's like, I'm sorry, I just keep staring at you. And the next line was not that he was so hot, but that he had like glitter on his face or something.
Yeah.
That I was like, okay, I am one of my favorite graduates of RuPaul's Drag Race is also Raven. So I am Team Raven, although I think she's probably going to get cut. Like the next time there's a 2-on-1, it'll be her and she'll get the boot because she's not right. crazy enough.
Right. It'll be the 2-on-1 will be her and Corinne, and he'll. And so whoever goes on a 2-on-1 with Corinne early on will get kicked off.
Yeah, like agree get kicked off disagree. And leave or stay and die. Like, I just leave.
Agree or disagree, gotcha. Raven is Selma Blair in a panini press.
Agree.
Yeah, I totally agree. You're 2 for 2.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Dave, do you have any picks? I know you don't know anybody's
I
name,
mean,
but you
I
can describe.
I don't dare predict, but I really want
the one in the red dress
Harris to go all the way
bet.
Just to see that total fucking clusterfuck of a train wreck of an accident actually come to fruition.
Corinne, you mean?
What'd I say?
I thought you said Harris.
No.
I just, oh, what did you say?
Fine. Yes, that's who I met.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right. I'm going to say Jamie, the one who revealed in this episode that she had previously dated a girl and made Nick have a boner at the bar like a fucking
idiot.
But listen, right. But hear me out. What I'm hoping for is that she gets to the final two and then she and the other woman fall in love and they both reject Nick, which would be cosmic justice. Jeff.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to go with my wife's early pick, which is Vanessa.
Okay.
The special needs teacher.
Oh, from Montreal.
Yeah, I think her, you know, I think there's not really a standout like blonde. Like there's Corinne, who's too crazy to win it.
Mm-hmm.
Like she'll get down to like the final three or the final five just by fucking her way there. And then Josephine is like, she's a little too butterfacey to make it that far.
There's a couple of those.
Yeah. I mean, there's no, like, The Bachelor is always, there's no shortage of boobs on The Bachelor. Like, this is the show, and last night there was nothing but boob talk.
But
I think Vanessa could do it. I think Jamie is a really crazy but interesting pick. You have to eliminate all of the people of color, because that'll never happen.
Yeah.
That's The Bachelor's brand is like, let's see how diverse we are. We have a lot of people of color. And then The Bachelor is always like, nope. So progress, everybody. So I think Vanessa, but like, it's so early. There's a lot of like ticking emotional time bombs that have yet to go off. So it's really hard to predict.
Well, continue reading Jeff's coverage of this season at previously.tv.
Best segue yet, I feel. That music means, once again, it's time for the Blotter Presents. Got a little potpourri style for you, wrapping up some recent headlines. The first is that ABC put the Z back in the Menendez brothers with their recent special, the title of which was As Long as a Fiona Apple Album. It was ably covered by Beth Spotswood for us on previously.tv. There was like one phone call with Lyle from prison that was new, and then a bunch of like total randos who aren't experts in the case rehashing shit we already knew. If it's on your DVR, delete it. Go looking on YouTube for one of the old TV movies, preferably the one starring Jill Clayburgh as Kitty. Much more entertaining use of your time. For those of you who are watching The Killing Season, there is some new intel on the Lisk case. Josh Zeman and Rachel Mills went on a podcast called America's Most Haunted last week. The new intel and discussion with a psychologist on the show starts at about an hour and a half in. In case the rest of it is not interesting to you, you can just jump to that. And speaking of shows with killing in the title, I didn't like The Killing Fields as much as I liked The Killing Season or The Killing or the Fields or Field of Dreams. But they do have a new case and it involves a body in a barrel and promises to be quite gruesome. It started, as you listened to this last night, it is on Discovery Channel, not Investigation Discovery, Discovery Channel proper. I'm tired. Sorry. And finally, speaking of Investigation Discovery, OJ, the missing evidence, despite the fact that I feel like all OJ projects should have just been strangled in the crib after last year's twin entertainment triumphs, the Martin Sheen narrated Maybe OJ is Innocent miniseries is starting next Sunday, the 15th on Investigation Discovery. And we will be covering it at previously.tv. If there's any true crimey stuff that you want me to watch/talk about on this segment, The Blotter Presents, you can always email me, sarah@previously.tv, or tweet at us on Twitter @previouslytv.
I just had a quick question for Sarah. Did you say that Martin Sheen is narrating that, or Martin Short?
Martin Sheen.
Okay. All right. Different. It's a different. Okay. Got it.
That's a lot different.
He doesn't like you, he's grumpy as can be. He doesn't like fun, that's plain to see. Time to ask, will Dave hate this?
Probably.
Dave put this in the doc for us to discuss. It's a new show coming to Netflix January 20th called Frontier, and I'll read from the link that he put in our doc. It chronicles the highly competitive North America fur trade of the 1700s and the mission of an outlaw named Declan Harp, Jason Momoa of Game of Thrones, who disrupts, very ahead of his time, business as usual at the legendary Hudson's Bay Company. Will Dave hate this? Sarah, you think he will not.
I think he will not. And this is slender reasoning that is not necessarily Dave based, but stick with me. Momoa is pretty good at picking projects. Like, there's been some garbage time stuff because he looks like Jason Momoa, and when they can't get The Rock, they they take you. But he was really good in The Red Road and really seemed to care about it. And I think actually has a pretty good ear for scripts. And I think Dave mostly likes, or at least will give a chance to, period pieces, particularly those taking place in cold climes. So yeah, thanks to Momoa, I think Dave will not hate this.
All right. I think he will hate this. And this is slim reasoning too. I only watched the trailer, although we do have screeners. So we'll probably have a coverage on it in advance of the premiere next week. But I know that David T. Cole likes projects about Canada that are Canadian heavy. And as we know, the story of Canada is about people being nice to each other, as long as you don't talk about our treatment of Indigenous people. Cough, cough. I think if he were going to watch a show about the history of the Hudson's Bay Company, my opinion is that he would rather have it from the side of the company than from someone who's trying to fuck it up. Because like Sarah, he has an interest in process stories more so than, frontier-ish adventures. Dave, tell us.
I don't think I'm going to hate this. I'm intrigued by it. And there's two things I'm really looking forward to. First of all, the description of him disrupting the industry makes me think he's going to do like a Steve Jobs presentation in the middle of the Algonquin Forest or something.
While it's pivoting. Uber, but for blankets.
You know, it's a pelt. It's meat. It's on our nickels. Are you getting it? You know? And then the other thing is, I really want to do, maybe we could do it on the forums or in the thing, but an over under on how long it takes this series to show a Hudson Bay Company blanket.
Oh, first step.
And if you don't know what that is, it's sort of like the mother of pearl blanket with like the green, yellow, black, and
red
stripes on it. You know it if you see it, especially if you're from Canada. But it had like a fashion pop-up in the States about 3 years ago, I believe, and where it was like it was a thing people were doing for a hot month.
It's a more accessible financially version of the Pendleton blanket, which are very pricey.
Right. Yeah, I'm curious how they're going to explain how Jason Momoa is in, I'm going to assume Quebec or Ontario, present day Quebec and Ontario, how he managed that. Is he just like, you know, some guy that was on a ship and now he's here? Are they going to Sean Connery him where he's just this guy and nobody questions the fact that there is, you know, a...
What do you mean? Because he's Polynesian?
Yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
I'm sure that he's just playing a native Canadian person.
Yeah.
First Nations person. And they're like, whatever, he's kind of that color.
Yeah.
And he's like 6'5" and no one questions him.
Right.
He right.
can step on you and kill
also,
you.
Totally. It clearly says he's an outlaw. So, like, he's there for his own reasons, guys. He's an outlaw. He doesn't play by your fucking rules.
Frontier rules.
Right. Yeah. Even frontier rules. He's like, fuck that.
Yeah. So it seems to me that like this is a little bit like turn for Sarah.
Yeah.
That it might not be great, but there's enough of local interest and things that you were into once upon a time, now fictionalized, that I feel like I might dig it. And hopefully it's good. And we'll see soon and I'll report back.
All right.
All right. Woo.
It is time to go around the dial. Everybody's going to bring a little something, and we're going to start with Tara Ariano.
I'll keep this brief because it already dropped more than a week ago. But I mentioned in one of the minis over the holidays, the one about Alan Alda, I believe, that there's a Netflix remake of One Day at a Time with a Cuban family at the center of it, with Rita Moreno as the granddaughter. The grandmother. Justina Machado, formerly of 6 Feet Under, is the mom. The two kids are a couple of kids. I don't know. Stephen Tobolowsky's in the mix, too, as Justina Machado's boss. It's so good. You've probably already read all of the great reviews, and you may have already also read my new show fact sheet on it at previously.tv last week. I know that it looks super throwbacky because it's a multicam sitcom, and, you know, if your last experience of that from Netflix was Fuller House, you might be more inclined to not watch it because it seems very old fashioned, but it's really strong. It covers a lot of very interesting issues The single mom character is a military veteran who's now returned from several deployments, and she's a nurse. And so she has physical issues from her service, but also, you know, psychological ones as well. And it caused problems in her marriage because her husband was deployed as well. And there's, you know, they talk about immigration. They talk about, there's a big sexuality storyline that I won't spoil, but is great. And give it a shot. The first few episodes are very, very sitcom-y in a way that might make you not want to stick with it. But by the time you got to the finale, and I devoured all of the episodes over the holidays, I was bawling. It ends with the daughter's quinceañera, and there's a really lovely moment that closes it up. So if you are a mush like me, check out One Day at a Time. It's really good. And people were also saying in the thread about it when the story went up on previously.tv that they were worried that it was too different from the original, or, you know, if they hadn't watched it, they wouldn't get what people like about it. I really think, other than the fact that Schneider is still named Schneider, it's a different enough thing. I think the only reason that it's still even called One Day at a Time is so that Norman Lear could be attached as executive producer, and that probably made it easier to get it made, I'm guessing, because they're really fundamentally very different shows. So try it out. Trust me that it's worth sticking through the first sort of maybe two or three kind of corny episodes. It gets somewhere great. And for my plug, I'll just mention, since I said new show fact sheets, we've got a whole bunch of them. Last week we had Emerald City from Adam Grossworth, Vivica's Black Magic from Eve Beatty, and this week we will have ones on Summer House, Victoria, the PBS show, many others next week, six probably, and Frontier, as previously discussed, and from Jeff Drake, the Young Pope. Let's throw it to Jeff Drake.
Well,
all right, Jeff, here is your time to shine.
Okay. First of all, in case you haven't gotten the message, this ain't your daddy's Pope. Okay. This is a whole different kind of Pope. In fact, it is the most confusing kind of Pope you may ever watch on television.
It's so weird.
This show, like, Tara warned me that it's like, this is very weird. And it's like, it's weird in so many different ways, and also boring.
Yes.
In so many different ways. The show begins with a shot of a naked baby crawling over a pile of other naked babies. And then from
very
this
pile,
yeah, from this pile of babies emerges, crawling out of this pile of babies that we see from overhead, is the Pope, Jude Law. And then we reverse and we see that this is a large Christmas tree shaped pile of babies in front of the Vatican. This is where we begin. And then, I mean, then there's, I mean, it's so like all over the place. Then there's then he's addressing the crowd, but it's like a dream. And so like, but it's a long, long speech, like sucks you into thinking this is really happening. And like, I literally have no idea what this show is trying to be. Like, it feels like it's a comedy sometimes.
Yeah, it's like a weird art project that, I mean, I think people are building it up in their minds because The Young Pope is such a, like, it's such a comedy title, and people are definitely having a lot of fun with it on Twitter. I've seen young all Pope. The Young Pope's jokes, Young Pope, like, young folks, etc. A lot of filk about this on Twitter, but I think people are going to tune in and be like, I can't watch this. It's too fucking weird.
It's weird, but it's not like weird enough to sustain your interest.
Yeah.
Like, there are lengthy speeches that are like about the process of popery. Yeah. You know? Like, where it's like a bunch of other cardinals talking about like what implications this has.
Yeah.
I mean, this show, like, those moments make something like Wolf Hall look like it's a fucking action movie. Yeah.
But Wolf Hall is actually like interesting and makes sense and is good. Like, this this just seems like jerk off motion, the show.
Yeah. I mean, this is like, I'm going to like, this is like, watching this gave me the same feeling I had when I heard that Martin Scorsese's new movie is a meditation on religion. I'm like, oh God, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, I recently watched the Madonna concert film on Showtime, and she has one number where she's like kneeling in front of a priest, and then at the back she's got dancers that are dressed like an imam and a rabbi and a Buddhist right. clergy person. Right. So it's like, ooh, sure. It's so transgressive. Like, I love Madonna, but and give it a rest. In terms of that, like, we get it. But this is like that that number, the show.
Yeah, but like that said, definitely watch the first episode, because even what we're saying about it, like, is not like
it
you're
can't
still
prepare
gonna,
you.
You're not going to be prepared. You're still going to be like, what?
Yeah,
like you're definitely not going to watch it and be like, I don't know what the fuck they're talking about. This is the most amazing thing no. that I've seen on HBO since John from Cincinnati.
I will also say there's been a placard for this at the bus station closest to my house for a while, like yeah. a month. Someone immediately defaced it to read the young nope. And the way that it was punctuated, it was just like they crossed out Pope and just wrote nope and then put a very authoritative period at the end. Like the young nope. Like also the old nope and the middle-aged nope, apparently. Yeah. Like that was very firm ixnay from the residents yeah. of Prospect Park West.
I mean,
I know.
who is
makes
this
me
show
laugh every time?
Who is this show for?
I honestly do not, like, I really don't know. So anyway. If it's for you, tell us in the comments.
Yeah, please.
And for your plugs, you're still covering Top Chef. We had you on last month to talk about that.
Top Chef, yes, I'm covering Bachelor, Top Chef and The Bachelor, and that's my reality doses. Mm-hmm. And then I'll be writing more. I mean, I'm still sorting through like my like what exactly there is to say about this show. It yeah. is so weird.
Yeah, good luck with that. Better you than me.
Thanks.
Sarah D. Bundy.
Oh boy. So Sleepy Hollow returned last Friday. Mr. Crane Goes to Washington / Sleepy Hollow, the new class. It was kind of piloty because they had to start over with basically everything except two, like one and a half of the characters from the previous iteration. Nicole Beharie, who played Abby Mills, has left the show. I'm not 100%. Actually, I really feel like they should have canceled it. The ratings were abysmal, so they may still cancel it. But they did do something clever, which I didn't even realize might have been an issue, because I am the last living person who's not seen Hamilton. And it was name-checked in the script. Like, there was a back and forth about someone like snarking on Crane's cosplays being out of date because it's all about Hamilton now. But the show has moved him to Washington, D.C. and started making all of the like weird supernatural connections to like Civil War stuff. Specifically that John Wilkes Booth summoned a demon to help him brain suck Abraham Lincoln to death and didn't actually shoot him in the head, which is like, okay, sure. Like, they can't even agree on what he yelled when he leaped onto the stage, so
was it like
sure.
the end of Starship Troopers?
Yes, I guess. I don't know. I haven't seen the movie since it came out, but let's go with yes. Okay. So I think that's actually really smart, because I, you know, they sort of owned that revolutionary twisted history waterfront. But once Hamilton has eaten your lunch and literally everybody else's from here to Philadelphia, you got to figure something else out, which they did. But, it, you know, it's still got the same problem that a lot of Fox shows do, which is that they throw literally everything in the writer's room, including a couple writers, at the wall in season one. And then they have kind of nowhere left to go. And it's like, well, here's our cool premise. And we ran through all the story ideas. So I guess now we'll introduce a kid and then have it get kidnapped. Like, well, okay, no thanks. I mean, this is the only show on TV that found a way to misuse John Noble. I don't know how you even do that.
Yeah,
but it's on Friday, so it's, you know, safely quarantined from anyone else caring. And I will continue to cover it on previously.tv until either our readers stop caring or it gets canceled. I'm not sure which is going to come first. yeah. My plug is for my podcast with Mark Blankenship, strangely titled Mark and Sarah Talk About Songs. Upcoming episodes include a guest appearance from our own Nick Reinwald Jones talking about 90s boy band, Another Bad Creation. So I have no idea what is going to happen. It's going to be hilarious. There's going to be swearing, and we invite you to download that episode and all of our other ones. We're on iTunes, Mark and Sarah talk about songs.
All right. I'm talking about something very important today, and that is if you have a fourth generation Apple TV, that's the chunkier one, the one with the new interface and the infuriating square remote that you can never tell which way you're holding it. So on the remote, if you press the microphone button, you activate Siri, which is, you know, the thing you can talk to, just like on the phone. And you could say a title of a TV show, and it'll try to find it for you. The thing to do on the Apple TV is how distorted and poorly you can say the name of the show and still have Siri understand it.
Can you pronounce it as though you were Nick Vile and still have Siri understand?
So somebody throw out a TV show that I'll search for. Anybody?
Happy endings.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Okay.
Good one.
Boop, boop. And it'll come back with, you know, like, you know, maps or something. And then you just keep on going. And you keep on going. I made a video of it. Check it out in the show notes. I can't do it justice because you can't see all the reactions on Siri. But it'll say, like, did you say hello to me? And all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
You just keep on going until you're clear enough that Siri understands. And then, you know, by that result, you'll be able to determine how severe of a stroke you can have in your future and still use the Apple TV.
That's important.
How to use the Apple TV with the Siri remote.
I would say keep doing it until you can get it to understand you, or until the point where the other person in the room with you finally looks up from Twitter and says, quit fucking around, let's watch the show already.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Hi, Extra Hot Great. My name is Caroline, and I'm a longtime listener from France. Please excuse any mispronunciation from my part, as English is my second language. I'm submitting an episode from Psych, Season 1, Episode 15, entitled Scary Sherry for the Canon. My motivation is to rehabilitate this series in your eyes, since it has been unfairly treated, in my opinion, whenever it comes up on the podcast. It is by no means a great series, but it's fun and entertaining. It's certainly my go-to series whenever I need to feel better after a hard day. The concept wasn't new even when the series started in 2006. A talented and eccentric outsider helps the local police in their investigations. But in the case of Psych, the procedural aspect is just a conceit. It's the platform used to showcase the characters and pay tribute to pop culture. It's not about case solving, but about referencing famous movies, notably movies from the 80s. For example, 4 out of 5 stars from The Breakfast Club have shown up at one point or another. I chose Scary Sherry because it's the last episode of Season 1, and it's the episode where many of these elements click. The Halloween-themed episode tackle urban legends and references films like Legally Blonde, The Silence of the Lambs, or Basic Instinct. On Halloween night in 1987, Sean and Gus thought that they witnessed a troubled girl called Sherry throw herself from her window at the creepy, wispy Sunny Pines mental institution. From that moment on, Scary Sherry has haunted the halls of the now-abandoned facility. Cut to 20 years later, when a girl, Doreen, is being chased by what appears to be a ghost through the creepy-looking halls of wispy Sunny Pines, falling through the same window to her death below. The investigation ties her death to a sorority house, which leads Detective Juliet O'Hara to channel Elle Woods as she goes undercover as a Beta Kappa Theta alumni grief counselor. Jules doesn't buy the copycat suicide theory and thinks that as Doreen was a pledge, there is more to the story. She asks for Sean and Gus's help to prove it, which leads to the first great scene of the episode, where the three of them witness the alleged ghost haunting the sorority house. It establishes a few recurring gags from the series, such as people mistaking Gus for Bud from The Cosby Show, and Sean and Gus running and screaming from a perceived danger, which is always a delight. Back at the Psych office, Gus is trying to figure out the meaning behind the ghost's word, aconite. unusual fashion. It goes about it in the most obscure way, trying to find answers in dead languages like Sanskrit, Avedan, and Old Church Slavonic. Sean immediately realizes that it's just Bianca spelled backwards, which means that the ghost has decided on a target. And sure enough, Bianca gets toasted in her bathtub in the next scene. Later on, Sean and Gus are having dinner at Sean's dad's house, where the latter reveals that they have been wrong about Scary Sherry all along. While they were closing their eyes, Henry, then a police officer, was able to rescue the girl at the last second before she jumped. After recovering from that revelation, the boys realize that they are the origin of an urban legend, which is dope. Sean decides to concentrate on the most obvious culprit, Alice, Doreen's best friend. She had a clear motive for persecuting the sorority girls, since they are all clearly involved in Doreen's accidental murder. So Sean decides to snoop around Alice's house, looking for clues, while Gus is distracting the Scottish housekeeper. This scene is great because it establishes other iconic moments from the series. Gus's fake crying here over his imaginary cat, Mrs. Pickles. Gus's use of fake names. Here it's DeAndre. And it also gives us Poppy's nonsensical anecdote about her Basset Hound, which I think is great. Sean's snooping pays off. Alice is definitely our culprit. But while he realizes this, he gets a phone call indicating that Jules, still undercover, is going back to the creepy abandoned mental hospital, supposedly to attend a candlelight vigil for Doreen. Sean realizes that it must be a trap set by Alice to eliminate Jules, whom she perceives as the epitome of the airhead sorority type. Which leads us to Gus's great speech about under what conditions he will agree to go back to the haunted mental hospital. I cannot emphasize how much I love Dooley Hill in this role. He's the best. As the boys are rushing to her rescue, Jules, in her glorious legally blonde pink attire, arrives at the asylum, where she's greeted by Alice. Jules realizes something is off when she notices the thousands of candles lit everywhere in the hospital, which, as she points out, must have been both time-consuming to lit and expensive. But the series makes it a point to show that Jules is a kick-ass detective who doesn't need anybody to take down a crazy-ass girl like Alice. By the time the boys arrive, she's taken Alice's axe from her and actually seems to be contemplating using it on her. But let's not forget the scene where Gus's foot gets stuck in the staircase and his worst nightmares comes true when he's left alone to fend for himself against imaginary ghosts using his belt as a weapon. This episode is not perfect. There is a lame B-plot where Detective Lassiter is supposed to train a rookie, except the rookie turns out to be a kooky older lady, and it's neither here nor there, and a shameful use of both Timothy Omidson and Mercedes Rule, who are both awesome. However, it lays the foundation for what makes Psych such an enjoyable show, movie references, funny recurring gags, and at its core, a friendship for the ages. James Rode and Dooley Hill have great chemistry together and comedic timing, and that's why I think this episode deserves a spot in the canon. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Caroline. You don't need to ask forgiveness for your terrible English.
Says the person who still thinks is the actor from Taken is Liam Neeson.
It is. I'm pretty sure it is. Yeah, I will close. Go first, and I will make this short and sweet. I think you nailed it at the start. It's not a great show, but it is like a comfort show. And I get that. But to put it in perspective, I think like my title for this slot in your viewing behavior, a show that you can go to but you don't have to pay full attention to, you know, a show with a rhythm and predictability that invites you to watch but doesn't punish you for not paying full attention, is Ancient Aliens. And I wouldn't probably put an episode of Ancient Aliens up for the canon at any point in time, and I kind of feel like,
really,
that sounds like a threat.
I've been hoping that would happen.
I can definitely put up an episode as like the best indicative stupid episode, but I would never expect it to actually get any votes. Like, there's an argument to be made for
it being...
this is the good as good as it gets in Agent Aliens.
Right.
And I thought this was like a perfectly fine, enjoyable show. It has like a very USA-ness to it. And, you know, like all shows of that period on that network, they exist to fill your Saturday afternoon with small delights, right?
Yes.
I will say that my absolute favorite part of this episode was the cartoony manner in which the toaster is dropped from the window into the tub. It was like right out of like some sort of Happy Tree Friends cartoon or something.
Very Tex Avery, I thought.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah, I thought that was really great. And I know nobody was a regular watcher here, but who do you think the Breakfast Club holdout was?
Sheedy.
God, yeah. I don't know. That's a good
question.
I'm
going to go with Sheedy, too.
I'm going to say Ringwald.
All right, I'll look it up while you guys start making your arguments.
Okay.
But I will say that I get it, but it's I don't think its comfort elevates it to a canon-worthy show.
Caroline, thank you for this submission. Your second language, English, is already a master's degree's worth ahead of all of the Bachelor ladies. So congrats. In fact, I may hire you to present all of my future canon presentations because it was very musically done. Unfortunately, I forget if it was us, you and I, Tara, or me and Linda Holmes, who used to have this like rule that we would refer to at Television Without Pity about how USA shows of this era were like celebrity Scientologists and that you were allowed to like one.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah. This was not my one. And despite the fact that Monk is basically indistinguishable from this and all but like the very, very particulars. It's just, this is not for me. Maybe this is like a Jerry Lewis thing where the French find this hilarious and I'm just sitting there like, please make it stop. But there were a couple of cute moments. It's always nice to see Corbin Burnson working. He always shows up dressed to play, but it was just like cutesy, slow, telegraphs the twists, punchlines sort of weren't that punchy and wouldn't end. That scene where they're like scrambling out of the sorority house, freaking out. It seriously felt like it went on for a week. I loved the line, which means we're both Scott Glenn. But I was like, all right, that's that's fair. My notes read, fine, heh. But yeah, this just isn't like, this is the kind of, you know, show that's like, holy shitsu. It's just not for me. And because this has never been for me, I have no context for whether this is a particularly good one. So this is probably going to be a no for me, but excellent presentation. And feel free to read one of my swear-filled Sopranos presentations in the future for money. Because it was lovely to listen to, even if I did not agree with the substance of it.
All right. Tara, I have an exciting update.
Yes.
It's Emilio Estevez.
Whoa, of course.
For this show.
Whatever.
Wow.
All right, Jeff, do you want to go next?
Yeah. Like Dave, I don't have a lot to say about this. And like Sarah, this show really isn't my cup of tea. I totally see the charm, though. Like, I understand why there are plenty of shows that I watch and I'm like, why does anyone watch this? I don't get it. But I get the appeal of it. But there's just something about the general, like, the way it's lit, the way it's like, it doesn't look like a show that I should be like taking seriously. Like,
it does look a little cheap, yeah, and
also the
iCarly
choices,
doesn't it?
In the credits,
I mean,
the kerning are bad.
And so like, but that's fine. Like that, like there's plenty of room on television for shows that are like, this is just a good diversion and I'll watch it. And I don't, you know, it's like, you know, like people watch, like, I mean, Friends is a superior show, but like, do you really have to watch every episode a million times?
Yes!
No, but like, oh, I'm sorry, Tara. but you know, there's also just something to me, like, like, I kind of like both of the leads, but I also kind of, I'm kind of not drawn in by them. Like, they don't bug me, but, like, there's just something distancing about the show. It just, it had plenty of moments that I was sort of like brought a smile, but I feel like for me, the canon, for something to go in the canon, it's like, I need, because I never watched the show, and so, like, I was like, okay, well, maybe this will draw me into the show, and it didn't really, and I think a great case was made. I love it when people who have their second language is English and they're like, oh, pardon me, my English is so inelegant. I, you know, and it's just like, right. Like, you know, it's like one of our babysitter is, her first language is Spanish. And she's like, my English is terrible. I was like, I barely know how to tell people to go to the library in Spanish. So like, I have no room to say anything about that.
I think I think what this show is in need of is sort of like an auxiliary canon, which is like the comfort canon.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, because it's not, this show's never going to be in the same, you know, weight class as like your Sopranos and your Breaking Bads and stuff like that. Even your Beverly Hills, right? Because it's not enough of the show that it is to be in the canon, right? It is not concentrate. It is not stylized enough. It is just sort of like, you know, it's the seamless.com takeout convenient thing that's down the street. You know, it's an okay sandwich, but it's not a great sandwich.
Well, I can jump off from that, Jeff, if you are done.
Yeah, basically.
Okay,
go ahead.
Well, yeah. When Jeff said he understood why people like the show, that's exactly what I said to Dave as the credits came up. Like, I get what is appealing about this. But like, to Dave's point, when you were saying like not even Beverly Hills 90210, I feel like this is a show that maybe got its hooks in people at a time when even 10 years ago, there was like a lot less TV, like there just was less of it. And I think, you know, people were maybe more forgiving of like a so-so show than they would be now. And I say that as someone whose USA go-to show is, as I've mentioned on this podcast many times, Royal Pains, the okayest show I've ever watched every episode of. So I get it. Like, I understand where she's coming from with this, but yeah, it didn't work on me either. I think, you know, the fact that this was an episode that was set in a sorority house was like kind of gave me a bad taste in my mouth because so much of it hinged on like, aren't sorority girls dumb? Like, okay, we get it, you know? And especially since this was post Legally Blonde, it's like that joke had already been told and like it was squared away. It was like the Steve Carell owns that. He owns it. It was like Legally Blonde was that of dumb sorority joke, girl jokes rather. Yeah. So that was part of it. But I understand the desire to make a case for a show that has such a strong place in your heart. But, you know, as Dave said, with regard to Ancient Aliens, I would never make you guys try and like accept a Royal Pains into the canon either, even if it's something that, you know, I personally treasure on a very weird level. So thank you so much for the excellent submission. But yeah, it's a no for me.
All right. Jeff Drake, what do you vote you?
Sadly, I'm going to vote no, but thank you very much for the submission.
Sarah D. Bunting?
I will also be voting null, but I would like to induct your suggestion for the like a side canon, like a couchin.
Yeah.
For
like sort of middle of the road shows. Yeah. Like,
that.
Yeah. So let's think of a name for that, but for this particular submission, may null.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's like a special episode that we do to fill in for holidays, just with the comfort canon or something like that.
I like that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
I'm also
going to
vote no, but thank you for this submission. Say magnifique. However, Psych, Season 1, Episode 15, that's the season finale. Scary Sherry, also sometimes referred to as Scary Sherry, colon, Bianca's Toast. You are hereby not inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yeah.
And will not tolerate
a loser. Wait.
Americans love a winner.
We?
And will not tolerate a loser.
No.
All for all say.
Tara, who's our winner of the week?
Well, before I say, I would like to just also add, please send us your canon and Nonak submissions. Instructions are at previously.tv under the under the podcasts.
Or at the bottom of any episode page.
Yes, yeah. For Extra Hot Great. We love doing them. We love when you submit. So please send us more
things.
Today. winner of the week. Let's say basically the entire CW lineup, which almost all got renewed at the, it was announced at the Television Critics Association press tour this week, including Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, which had a song in one of the two episodes that it came back from holiday break with about how bad their ratings are. We mean our ratings on LegalScores.com. It was a very meta song. It was quite cute. But I'm happy Crazy Ex-Girlfriend is going to come back, particularly since they put it on Fridays, which is the dead zone. Not probably coming back, and will, it's rumored, be wrapping up their seasons online, probably. Our Frequency and No Tomorrow, the latter of which was one of the few shows that we got screeners for that I turned off at the first commercial break because it was so stank. Sorry if you worked on that show. It's not good. But congratulations to every other show on the CW. Your ratings may not be great, but man, they have figured out what their brand is and they are sticking the fuck to it. And God bless, because more networks should do that. Sarah.
Speaking of networks, our loser this week, I had in our prep doc as Fox News, because Megyn Kelly and Greta Van Susteren's new face both left, but Tara corrected that to NBC News actually being the loser, because that's who took on these battle axes. So yes, another quote unquote win for the Vichy network.
Yeah, I can't take credit for this, but someone that I follow on Twitter said Fox News, NBC News becomes Fox News and Fox News becomes Pravda. And that seems like it's just about the size of it. So good luck to us all. Cough.
Yeah, no shit.
Speaking about no shit, do you know what time it is? Game time. All right, everybody, this is the third game time of the season. Tara won the first two games, so it's Tara 2, everybody else 0. As a reminder, the season is won when somebody hits 5 victories. Today we are playing Chain Gang from repeat game time team submitters, Aliza and Maria.
Hey!
Who earned themselves extra credits, redeemable for extra hot, great mini topics of their choosing. Okay, in round one, you must chain together actors' names through a common name, word, or like a phoneme, you know?
Uh-huh.
Like a,
yeah. Yes.
I am going to list two shows, and you figure out the actor chain name. For example, I would say Empire and Tara's favorite show ever, Royal Pains. Uh-huh. The actor chain involved would be, do you want to guess, Tara? And I will give it this, it's always the order in which I say the shows too. I made that happen. So
okay.
The answer for that one would be Naomi Campbell Scott.
Oh God, that's obscure.
It's okay. The tough one.
Wow.
That's,
yeah.
Okay.
That's the example because we didn't want to use it in the game.
Sure,
but
sure.
That is the format.
Got it.
2 points for the answer without a hint. If you're not sure, ask for a hint and I will give you the first actor. And then you just give the second part of for 1 point.
Okay.
Make sense?
Yes. Cool.
There is a second round and we'll get to that when we get to it.
Okay.
Are we ready to go to Picky? Yes, we are.
Yes.
We will start with valued guest.
All right. We're going to go Jeff, Tara, Sarah.
All right.
Are we?
I'm excited to do this
now. Oh, he's back. All right. She's back.
This is Jeffina
is going to be participating in games.
Very good. All right. Jeffina, Tara, Sarah, are we ready to play Chain Gang?
Yes, sir.
Here we go, Jeff. We're going to take Drag Race and a racist led cooking show. Who are the two?
Rue Paula Deen.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
Dateline and American Idol.
Oh.
Remember, first, you can ask for a hint.
I'll take a hint.
All right, your first half is Stone Phillip.
Okay. Oh my God, it still doesn't help me.
Stone Phillip Phillips.
Oh,
oh, wow.
Sarah D. Bunting, here is your first. Rock of Love and Project Runway.
Rock of Love and Project Runway. Ah, hint.
Okay, well, the only person that would ever be the answer from Rock of Love is Brett Michael.
Okay. Yeah. Brett, oh, geez. Brett Michael Costello?
Is that a somebody from
Yeah, Parker that Runway? Was a contestant on the show.
All right, we'll give that
but
to you.
It's probably Brett Michael Kors, right?
It probably
right?
was, yes. All right, okay. Back to Jeff. The yes. Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt and Newlyweds.
And Newlyweds. Hint.
All right, your first half is Tytus Burgess.
Oh, okay, I got it.
And Newlyweds. Tytus Burgess Meredith. No, that's not it.
Close.
But that's the only Burgess I know.
That's what I would have guessed.
Tytus Burgessica Simpson.
Yeah.
Oh.
That makes more sense than the penguin from the 1960s Batman.
Does Maybe. It?
Kari Ariano.
Yeah.
Peaky Blinders
oh,
and
God. Yes.
How I Ooh, Met Your Mother. Geez.
Hint.
Sam Neill.
Okay. Sam Neill, Patrick Harris.
That's good for 1 point.
Oh,
couldn't
nice.
Couldn't build anything off Cillian Murphy and couldn't think who else was on the show.
King of Queens and Reno 911.
King of Queens and Reno 911. Oh, and the hint I need is the second one. So, who else was on Reno 911? Kevin James Brolin.
Leah Remini Nash.
God damn
wow.
it.
All right.
Good, wow, back that one is amazing.
Yeah, back to Jeff.
Okay.
This is a good one. The A-Team and 30 Rock.
Give me a hint.
Mr. T.
Mr. Tina Fey.
That's good for 1 point. Tatara.
Yep.
Brutal.
Kitchen Nightmares and My Name is Earl.
Okay. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I forgot his name. What is the Hell's Kitchen guy's name? Help me, I need a hint.
Gordon Ramsay.
God! Oh my God, yes. Yes, Gordon. Okay, what was the second show?
My Name is Earl.
Okay. Gordon Ramsay, Ethan wow. Stiefel. No, that's the guy from Center Stage.
Gordon Ramsay, Ethan Suppley.
Suppley.
Too yeah. slow.
Back to Sarah, right?
Sarah.
This is Sarah's? Yes.
Yes.
Gilmore Girls and a UK talk show named after the host.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Oh, finally. Lauren Graham Norton.
That is good for 2 points.
Yes. That was the only name that was in my head when I was trying to think of Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, Graham no. Norton.
Back to Jeff. The Nanny yes. and Ed.
Oh, my God. God, the 3 hours of sleep is killing my first. I should know her name. Hint, please.
All right. Your first half is Nicole Tom.
Oh, God. Yeah. Nicole. Yeah. Oh, what is his name? Nicole.
What is his name?
Tom. Bergeron.
Oh.
Kavanaugh.
What's his name?
Tom Kavanaugh.
Yeah. Oh, right. That. A-hole.
Tari Ariano.
Yes.
Law and Order and Sherlock.
Okay.
Law and Order. Lots to choose from there and Sherlock.
Yep.
Would you guys like to, like, tell me which half you would like
yes,
as a hint?
Yes, can we do that?
Sure.
Okay, give me the second. Give me the Sherlock name.
Martin Freeman.
Okay. Oh.
And Law and Order?
Yep.
Oh,
Jesse
I know it.
L. Martin Freeman.
Ah.
Derp. Sarah, House
yep.
and Star Trek.
Oh, House and Star Trek. Wow, my brain is completely emptied of names. That's excellent. Let's have the house half of the hint, please.
Robert, Sean, Leonard.
Nimoy. Robert, Sean, Leonard, Nimoy.
Nice.
All right, back to Jeff. Lost and 24.
Lost and 24.
Jesus Christ. There's only 8,000 people on both of those shows.
No kidding.
Well, you get the 2 points. It's really worth something, but that's what the hint is.
I get it.
Give me Lost, please.
Daniel Day Kim.
Daniel Day Kim Jong-un.
Anybody else?
Raver?
Yep. Correct.
All right.
All right, Tara.
Yep.
Gilmore Girls making another entry here. And Touched by an Angel.
Ew.
Touched by an Angel. Oh, no, I got it. Don't tell me. I got it. Alexis Bledela Reese.
Wow.
Wow. Well done.
That's all how right. She gets the big bucks.
Here's our last question for the first score break for Sarah. Preacher and Agent Carter. Preacher and Agent Carter.
Can I have the preacher hint, please?
Yes. In theory, you may. Jackie Earl Haley.
Oh, crap. What's her name? Don't say Haley. Jackie Earl Haley. Brickishaw.
Atwell.
Wow.
This is a hard-ass game, you guys. Jeff and I are tied with 3 points each. Sarah's in the lead with 4.
All right, guys. Guess what? It's time for... It is time for an exciting new feature, the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge.
What?
A long time ago, past and future guest Adam Grossworth gave us, me and Tara, a vintage Trivial Pursuit TV questions mini box.
Oh, yes, he did.
It is from 1989. At each official intra-game score break, the person with the least points will take this challenge.
Oh.
If there is a tie for last place, the person with the least season wins takes the challenge.
Jeff.
If that's also a tie, no challenge is given. Win the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge, or GEC, and you get 2 points added to your current score.
Wow.
To win the challenge, you must answer 3 of the 6 questions on the card correctly.
Holy shit.
Note.
It's amazing.
That all quest. This is a game from 1989.
Yep.
And on this mini set, there are no subcategories, so these are all general TV knowledge.
This is going to be tough for Jeff because he's only 23 years old.
I know. So, Jeff, are you ready to take the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge?
I'm so young, I don't know if I can do it.
What kind of juice filled the glass Dean Martin regularly held on his show?
A vodka.
That vodka is not a juice.
Potato juice.
Apple.
Isn't it?
No, I'm afraid isn't not. It? All right. What branch of the U.S. Armed Forces did Johnny Carson join?
The Navy.
How old were Buffy and Jody when Bill Davis was obliged to take them into his home?
Oh, so 2 ages.
No, how old? No, they're 1 age.
Oh, they're 1 age.
They're both the same age.
8.
6. Who has
Damn it,
more
that was
kids,
my first guess.
Kate or Allie?
Who has more kids? Kate.
Allie. Oh, you got to get the next 2 to get the points.
All right. Fair enough.
What primetime soap did Henry Kissinger cameo on?
Dynasty.
Correct.
Yeah!
Wow.
Who did his own voice in the animated version of the Abbott and Costello show? 50-50 chance for 2 points. Abbott or Costello?
Bud Abbott.
You just earned 2 points.
Oh, nice.
That was exciting.
All right. So Jeff
pulls
gets
into the
two
lead.
More points. All right, back to the game. We start
job,
again
Jeff.
With Jeff.
Oh, thank you.
What was that?
It was Jeff Tina congratulating Jeff.
Oh. Scandal and hot in Cleveland, Jeff.
Oh my gosh. Scandal and hot in Cleveland. Give me the scandal name, please.
Tony Goldwyn.
Tony Goldwyn. Jesus.
Tony Goldwyn D. Malik.
It's a bit of a cheat, but sure.
Number 17. Okay.
Spread Eagle.
Spread Eagle.
Tara Ariana.
Yes, sir.
The Walking Dead and Falcon Crest.
Walking Dead name, please.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan.
Jeffrey Dean Morgan Fairchild, question mark?
Yeah.
Highest drug ever? Yes.
Back to Sarah D. Bunting. American Idol and Psych.
American Idol and Psych. I will take the American Idol hint, please.
Paula Abdul.
Oh, Paula Abdul A. Hill.
Much respect.
Sports Night and Game of Thrones. Back to Jeff.
Oh, give me the Sports Night name, please.
Joshua. Molina, sorry.
Cute. Joshua Molina Heedy.
You got 1 point.
Nice. Not Headley, as Dave always thinks your name is.
Oh, really?
No, yes. Nor Eddie. Dunham, as I almost said.
Very
Stranger
different
Things and Boy Meets World.
Stranger Things. Oof. Name, please.
Winona Ryder.
Winona Ryder Strong.
Good for 1 point. ER and Battlestar Galactica.
ER,
yep.
And Battlestar Galactica.
Yes.
Anthony Edward James Olmos.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
See, you don't get them often, but when you get those two pointers, it's very satisfying.
Yeah. I heard that 3-point shot from here. I mean, 2 points, but it sounded like a 3-pointer to me.
Basketball.
But net.
Yeah.
Glee and Dawson's Creek. This is for Jeff.
Oh, I'm sorry. Glee and Dawson's Creek. Both shows that I watched every episode of, so I will take...
Well, you don't need to know the shows. You just need to know the actors in the shows.
Yeah, that also applies here.
I bet you know
here.
Both these actors, but...
Dawson's Creek name, please.
Michelle Williams.
Okay, Michelle, Glee, Leah Michelle Williams.
Good for 1 point.
There you go.
All right, to Tara.
Yep.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Alias.
I'll take the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. person.
Clark Gregg.
Damn it! I forget any Gregg on that show.
Well, it's the one Gregg that's in all of J.J. Abrams' shit.
Grunberg!
All right, to Sarah. The Price is Right and The Americans.
The Price is Right.
Oh, damn it!
Now, keep in mind.
And The Americans.
Yeah, there's very few Price is Right options available.
That's true. And yet my brain has emptied of both of them. Can I have the Price is Right option?
Sure. Drew Carey.
Oh, that didn't. Oh, right. Fuck. Drew Carey Russell.
Yeah. That should have been a 2-pointer.
Sure,
I'm going to
deserve that point, but I'll take it.
Yeah. Melrose Place in Dallas. This is back
oh,
to
for me?
Yep.
Or for Jeff
Melrose
Tina.
Place.
Yeah, Jeff Tina can answer this if she wants.
Oh, well, I'd take the first one as a hint, please.
Heather Locklear.
And then what's the second show again?
Dallas.
Heather Locklear. Heather Locklear-y Hagman.
Good job.
And a Dave point. Every time you answer as Jeff Tina, you get a Dave point. The Today Show and Silver Spoons.
Oh, for me. Silver Spoons person, please.
Ricky Schroeder.
Of course.
Oh. I don't know.
Anybody?
Oh.
Katie Core, Ricky Schroeder.
Oh, God.
Life Goes On and Grace and Frankie.
Oh, my God.
Life Goes On and Grace and Frankie.
Yes.
May I have the Life Goes On person, please?
Kelly Martin.
I
Can I give her a hint?
Oh, wait. No, we just mentioned that guy. Kelly Martin Sheen.
That was going to be the hint.
Yep.
All right. Picket Fences and Charmed.
Oh, wow. Could I have the Charmed person, please?
Holly Marie Combs.
Lauren Holly Marie Combs.
Yes.
Nice.
Wheel of Fortune and 30 Rock.
Pat Sajak McBrayer.
Oh, nice.
All right, here's our last question of round one. Private Practice and Atlanta.
Audra McDonald Glover?
You are correct.
Wow.
All right, big changes in this round. I have 7, Jeff has 9, Sarah has 11.
Ooh, all right.
What?
I'm exhausted. This game is really hard. It's good.
But who's,
it's really
who's the last place?
Me.
All right, that means it's time for the Grossworth Equalizer Challenge. Tara, what late comedian's catchphrase, late 1989, still late, but not as late,
okay,
was, but no,
No,
yeah. But this, the way they have it written here is, but no, -O, -O, but I suppose you can say, but no.
Okay, I don't know, John Belushi?
That is good for a point.
Okay.
Oh, that was a, wow. There we go. There's a nice big loud ding for you. What relation is Cora Hudson to Mindy McConnell? You know those guys.
Her mother?
Grandmother.
Okay.
What color flipper does the center contestant control on Wheel of Fortune in 1989?
Yellow?
Yes!
What?
Oh!
Nice! What musical variety host kept a fever chart to determine which of his artists were hot with viewers?
Don Cornelius?
Fantastic. Lawrence Welk.
Lawrence Welk!
What is Lee Stetson's code name?
Hat?
No.
Well.
the question is scratched now, but Linda Holmes would know this.
Okay.
It's Scarecrow.
Oh, sure.
All right. So this one to get the points.
Yep.
What Dynasty couple's first wedding anniversary is May 24th? I will accept first names.
The Carringtons?
Yeah, but I don't think that's...
Crystal and Mr. Crystal?
Oh, boy.
Billy.
I don't know.
What's Mr. Crystal's name?
I don't know.
Oh, so close.
Dale?
Blake and Crystal Carrington.
Oh, well.
All right, guys. Now it's time for round two.
Oh, shit.
Mashup of two shows based on the actor.
Okay.
So we're just flipping. I like your enthusiasm.
Oh, my God. Did Tara just fall out of a window?
Not drinking coffee for New Year's? All right. Cool.
So here's an example.
Really have to go to the bathroom.
Scott Kahn. And Stedman Graham.
Scott Kahn?
Kahn. Thank you. Scott Kahn, Stedman Graham. The show mashup? Hawaii 5 Oprah.
Okay, yeah.
All right, so that's the
format. That was a sample. I thought that was real. Okay.
Yep. All right?
Yep.
All right, our first question for Mr. Jake Tholomew Drakelton. Nigel Lithgow, Abby Lee Miller are your two actors. Appearing in what shows chain them together?
I'm sorry, say Nigel Lithgow.
Abby Lee Miller.
Could I get the second show, please?
Dance Moms.
Oh, so you think you can Dance Moms.
That is good for 1 point. Tatara.
Yes.
Taylor Schilling, James Spader.
Orange is the New Blacklist.
Ooh.
Nice.
Verity Bunting. John
Stamos.
Hugh Laurie.
Full House, MD.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That could have been Full House, Fuller House, MD, yeah. Fuller, Full House. There's a lot of variation there, but you got the gist. Taye Diggs, Viola Davis.
Taye Diggs. Give me the Taye Diggs show.
Those are in the wrong order. So it's Taye Diggs last. It's Viola Davis, Taye Diggs.
Oh, okay. Give me the Taye Diggs.
Okay. Murder in the First. So that's the second part.
Okay. Yeah. How to Get Away with Murder in the First.
Yeah. Sadly, Tatiana Maslany. Maslany.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tracy Ellis Ross.
Orange is the New Blackish. Show I would watch.
Orphan Blackish.
Damn it!
You big dummy.
I know too.
So confident too.
Oh my god.
You're pretty weird.
I have made that mistake before on the show, I am sure.
God. Alec Baldwin.
I peed out all my smarts.
Emily Dickinson. Alec Baldwin. Peter Dinklage. And this is for Sarah. Alec Baldwin. Peter
Alec
Dinklage.
Alec Baldwin. Match Game of Thrones.
2 points.
Nice.
So jealous of that one.
David Caruso. Don Johnson.
Okay.
You don't need a hint on this one.
No. I don't?
You better not.
No.
Really?
David Caruso.
Yes.
Don Johnson.
Come on.
My brain is just not working. Please give me the Don Johnson.
Miami.
Oh, wait, no. CSI Miami. Vice. Sorry. I know. I'm a big
dummy. We giving him 1 point or
1 point.
For...
1 point.
Oh, very firm from Dave.
What oh, point? Darn. I thought I beat it.
Do I need to take away his Dave point, too?
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Don't take away his
Stephanie
Dave
Powers, Jamie King.
Okay.
And this is
oh, okay. Tara. This is to me. Yeah. Heart to Heart of Dixie.
Orange is the New Black. John sure. Taffer, Dennis Leary to Sarah D. Bunting.
John Tapper?
Taffer.
T-A-F-F.
Taffer.
Yep. Yep.
I need the Taffer show name.
Bar Rescue.
Oh, Bar Rescue Me.
Bar Rescue Me. Christian Slater. Yes. I'm saying everything like Emily Dickinson. My cat named Christian Slater. Christian Slater. Seth Green. Christian Slater and Seth Green for Jeff.
Mr. Robot Chicken.
Good for 2 points.
Nicely done.
Daniel Goddard. Mm-hmm. Gordon Ramsay.
Great. Give me the first person's show.
Beastmaster.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. What? Tara's gone through a process of dumbening. I'm going to call that one Beastmaster Chef or Beastmaster Chef Jr.
God.
Oh, she really did pee out all
her smarts.
Okay,
sorry. He's only got 7,000 shows.
Yeah, but only one of them starts with Master.
And it's Orange is the New Black. Okay.
Yes.
David Tennant. My cat, David Tennant. I'm not going to get sick of that. Everybody else
Stop.
Is.
Stop.
And Tony Danza. And this is to Sarah.
Doctor Who's the Boss.
Doctor Who's the Boss.
Angela.
I'm going to butcher all these names.
That was Mona. Not bad.
Thank you. That's my Tony Danza.
That's pretty good.
All right.
Angela.
Matthew Reese.
Reese.
Yes.
Tamara Mowry. M-O-W-R-Y.
The American's Idol.
No.
Cute.
What?
That's Brothers and Sister
Sisters. Sister Sister.
Oh. Cute.
Jesse Spencer, Nathan Fillion.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Chicago Firefly.
Chicago Firefly. Bring us into our first score break of the second round. Kathy Bates, Chris Noth.
Harry's Law and Order.
Harry's Law and Order.
Wow. Wow.
Sarah, that was gorgeous. All right. I have 13 points. Jeff has 14 points. Sarah has 20 points.
Holy shit. Wow. All right, Tara, that means you're in. Equalizer challenge. Here we go. What cartoon character asks, what is it? Fan mail from some flounder?
What cartoon character?
Yeah.
I don't know. George Jetson?
Rocket J. Squirrel.
Sure.
1989.
Uh-huh.
I don't even think that sounds... it doesn't matter. 60s uh-huh. maybe, I'm
sure.
guessing.
Yeah.
What, ironically, did Edge of Night crime czar Anthony Saxon's daughter make her living as? you know, Edge of Night.
A police officer?
Yes.
Okay.
Which of Jack Tripper's roomies works in a flower shop?
Janet? Oh.
Yeah.
Which of Anne Romano's daughters is older on One Day at a Time?
Julie.
That's three, but let's do it.
Okay.
Anything after three gets converted into Dave points. What talk show says that your signal for leaving the beach is when the fat couple next to you has completed foreplay?
Ugh. What was
talk
the first
show
part?
Host says that your
Johnny,
signal for leaving?
Johnny Carson?
David Letterman. Mm. What character from a primetime soap has been dubbed a human oil slick?
J.R. Ewing?
Yeah, J.R. Ewing. Yep. Very well done. All right, back to the game and back to Jeff Drake.
Yes.
Here's something else I'm going to mispronounce. Wesley Earl, E-U-R-E, and June okay. Lockhart.
I mean...
Yeah.
Just
the intercourse PA Lockhart.
Can you give me the first one?
Land of the Lost.
Land of the Lost in Space.
George Lowe, Jennifer Love Hewitt.
First, please.
Space Ghost.
Space Ghost Whisperer.
Kim Fields and John Sim.
John Sim?
Yeah, two M's. The extra M is for extra Sim.
Uh-huh. Facts of Life as We Know It?
Facts of Life on Mars.
Oh,
fuck.
Kim Dickens.
Damn it.
Anthony Michael Hall. This is to Jeff.
Oh, hold on. Your Kim Dickens broke me for a second. Can you give me Kim Dickens' show, please?
Yes. Fear the Walking Dead.
Fear the Walking Dead Zone.
That is good for a point.
Nice.
Sally Struthers, Jaleel White.
All in the Family Matters.
Eric McCormick, Brett Butler.
Will and Grace Under Fire.
Oh.
Tim Daly, Rob Lowe.
Tim Daly and Rob Lowe. Give me Tim Daly's show.
I think you have those in the wrong order.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
I apologize. Yeah, I tried to correct all the ones. So that let's make that Rob Lowe and Tim Daly. Okay. We'll give you a moment to reconsider.
The West Wings.
Yes, my apologies. All right, Melissa Joan Hart, Julia Ormond.
Sabrina the Teenage Witches of East End.
That is good for 2 points.
Hey, nice. Adam.
Back to Sarah. Peter Falk, Will Arnett.
That's
Peter Falk.
I made this one up.
Will Arnett.
Oh, can I steal?
Oh, my God.
If she gets it wrong, I think the guests do have steal meals. Yes?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yes.
Can I have the Arnett show, please?
BoJack Horseman.
Oh, I was going to guess that. Fuck. It's Columbo BoJack Horseman.
Yeah, that's good for a point.
Nice.
Wentworth Miller, Aaron Paul.
Wentworth Miller, Aaron Paul is Prison Breaking Bad.
Sure is.
Alicia Dushku.
Yep.
Kevin Spacey.
Oh, Doll House of Cards.
Danny Ooh. McBride, Maggie's Danny McBride, Maggie Smith.
Would you believe?
What was the second one?
Maggie Smith, Danny McBride, and Maggie Smith.
Eastbound and Downton Abbey.
Yeah. And not a bad idea.
Nope, that's pretty good.
All right, here comes everybody's last question. So let's get a quick non-official score break.
Okay, Jeff has 20. I have 22. Sarah's smoking us both with 25.
All right.
We can win now.
Nope, nobody can catch you, but let's finish
Sarah!
The game up. Jace Robertson? Is that how you pronounce it? J-A-S-E?
Probably.
Sure.
Linda Evans. Jace Robertson, Linda Evans, and this is Jeff.
Give me Jace Rob. What Rob?
Jace Robertson is Duck Dynasty.
Duck Dynasty.
Yep.
All right.
And then Dynasty is like overlapped twice. You have to put extra ink on Dynasty. Robert Vaughn, uh-huh. Mike Epps.
The man from Uncle Buck.
Yes.
The man from Uncle Buck is what that
nice.
Streak was. All right, our last question of the game for Sarah D. Bunting.
Our victor.
John Astin, Richard Dawson.
The Addams Family Feud?
Woo!
Guess what, guys? I was wrong. That wasn't the last question. There's still a few more.
What?
What is happening? Score,
Rick, please.
Okay.
Not
Jeff,
a lot, but a few.
Jeff has, I'm just scratching out all our final scores. Jeff has 21. I have 24. Sarah has 26.
Yes.
All right, that means it's time for the Girls Who Think About the Challenge. Who was last place?
Jeff.
Jeff.
Hey.
What kind of animal is Yaki Doodle?
Yaki Doodle is a chicken.
Close. Duck.
Damn it.
What's the major industry in Falcon Crest's Napa Valley?
Winery.
Derp. Who drew the outline of Alfred Hitchcock that appears at the start of his shows?
Alfred Hitchcock.
What black Woodstock vet croons commercials for Amtrak and Kodak?
Please say Jimi Hendrix, please.
I don't know.
Richie Havens.
Oh, Richie Havens.
How many notes are there in Dragnet's opening salvo? That's a great word, salvo.
Four.
Correct. Okay, here's an extra one. Which of the Ingalls is adopted on Little House on the Prairie?
Did you get three?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Which of the Ingalls is adopted?
Yep.
Frankenstein Ingalls.
Ooh, close. Albert. All right. Oh. Apologies. Here's our final set. Everybody's got three questions here.
Okay.
Fred Savage, Marla Pennington, and this is for Jeff.
Fred Savage and Marla Pennington.
Yes.
Give me Marla Pennington's.
One small. Oh, I read them in the wrong. Blah, 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 blah. Pay no attention. I read them in the wrong order. Marla Pennington, Fred Savage.
Small Wonder Years?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jason Bateman, Simon Baker.
Arrested Developmentalist.
Arrested Developmentalist.
Nice.
Heather Graham. Joan Van Ark.
Why is it still funny?
I don't know.
What the fuck? Joan Van Ark.
Joan Van Ark. Heather Graham. Joan Van Ark.
Can I have the Joan Van Ark one?
Sure. Although you're probably going to wish you had the other one. Knott's Landing.
Oh!
The Heather Graham Show is famously one that only aired like an episode.
Like
I
half
think.
An episode.
Yeah, yeah. I could like picture the font.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Emily's Reasons Why Not Landing. Peter Krause, right? Mm-hmm. John Larroquette. To Jeff.
This is me? Okay, yeah. Peter Krause and John Larroquette. Sports Night Court.
Correct. Mm. Chad Michael Murray.
Yep.
Daniel J. Travanti.
Yep. One Tree Hill Street Blues.
One Tree Hill Street Blues. Carl Urban, Gemma Chan.
Almost Humans?
Almost Humans. All right, here comes everybody's last question. Unofficial score break, please.
Okay, Jeff has 27.
Yep.
I have 28. Sarah has 29.
Ooh, so it is a close game at the end. Everybody's last question coming up. Jeff Drake.
Oh, yes.
Marion Ross.
Yeah.
John Aniston.
Marion Ross, Happy Days of Our Lives.
2 points.
This is for sure the actual last question now?
Yeah.
Okay.
oh, God. I never remember how to pronounce his last name. Robert
Guillaume.
Guillaume, uh-huh. Thank you.
Yep.
Katie Seagal.
Ben Sons of Anarchy.
Ben Sons of Anarchy. Also a fantastic show.
A better,
so
much better show.
All right. Sarah, here's your last question. Will Forte and Zac Efron. And what does she need to keep the win?
She needs to
get a
it.
Point?
Yeah, if she asks for a hint, she and I tie.
Okay.
Will Forte,
yes.
And Zac Efron?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to have to take the tie. I need a hint.
Okay.
I need the Forte show.
Will Forte, Clone High.
Yeah. Oh, Clone High School Musical.
Okay, Clone High School Musical. So now with Ty, Tara, and Sarah.
So I win.
Yes.
Sarah and I are done.
Okay.
Okay. I'm going to read out our two actors. First person to give me the answer wins the game.
Okay.
If you answer incorrectly, the other person gets a free stab at it. Ready? Mm-hmm. Anna Sophia Robb and Billy Piper. Anna Sophia Robb, two one. B's, and Billy Piper.
The Carrie. Oh, shit. I can't remember what the other show is.
Oh, some hints for Sarah there.
I know it starts with Diary, and I can't remember it.
The Carrie Diaries of a Call Girl?
The Carrie Diaries of a Call Girl.
Sarah!
Sarah
had to win that one twice,
Sarah.
So
whew, I feel that was okay. A fun game. See, I told you those 2 points were satisfying, right? I also put the hardest part up first because I figured it'd be fun, more fun to end on the easier. All right, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We rose to the occasion of the Bachelor's Umpty 12th season before Sarah presented the blotter presenting the New Year's crime offerings. And we traded arguments for and against Dave hating the the Hudson Bay Company drama frontier. Yes, I am pleased with myself. Thanks for asking. We then went around the dial with stops at One Day at a Time, The Young Pope, Sleepy Hollow, and the Apple TV Siri remote. Caroline tried to psych us out, but alas, we did not induct Sykes season one finale into the canon. We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's Game Time. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole, and on behalf of Tara Ariana,
what if the real Rose is the friends we made along the way?
Sarah T. Bunting,
happy birthday, Dan,
and Jeff Drake.
See ya, Jade and Tanner's divorce.
Thanks for listening, everyone. We'll see you next time, right here on Extra Hot Great.
Well, I have a happy ending.
Shake it like you mean it.
Very doubtful.
That sounds about right.
I'll see you later.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.